Hey, Sean, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, Dan?
I'm doing great. You are the first guest to come back onto the show, so congratulations, and also I'm sorry. Today we're talking to your best friend, Will, and his lovely partner, Rachel. Now, you dated your wonderful wife, Kat, while she was living in the UK, and you were living in the States, and Will dated Rachel for a period while she was in Spain, and he was back home. Did you guys talk a lot about being in similar situations and give each other advice?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I've known Will for a long time, and whether I was dating Kat or not, I knew Will through long-distance relationships with Rachel in various different places. And yeah, it was always nice to have someone in a similar situation, but also for both of our partners to have people in the situation in that me and Will were touring a lot as well. So it was multifaceted where, you know, we had these similarly complex relationships of many moving parts.
For sure. What is the best way to cope with a relationship when you're not together in the same place, when you are, as you guys were touring or as they were, across the sea?
The most important thing is to, you know, let them know that you're still important, even though you might be halfway across the world, you know, busy getting ready to play a show. It's just taking that time to get on the phone or just, you know, show that they're appreciated.
For sure. Now, Will lives in California. You live in Philadelphia. How have you maintained your long-distance best friendship?
When he moved out to California, he was coming back to Philly so often, either recording or shows or weddings. I often joke that I saw Will more after he moved to California than when he was living on the other side of the city.
Is it harder when Kat was away or when Will was away? Answer truthfully.
Definitely Kat.
Good answer, right answer. All right, let's start the show. Hello and welcome to Out of Love, the show where we learn how to love ourselves, our partners, and where I try to learn to become a great wedding officiant. My name is Dan Cassarella, and you know me, turn the O2 to an O3. Today's show, Will and Rachel's love story of getting back together, periods of long distance, and really knowing your partner. Will Lindsay is my favorite songwriter. When I was in college living in Philadelphia, there was no band I admire more than W.C. Lindsay. A band that only existed in 21 tracks, capturing what it felt like to be 21. Grappling the harsh realities of the past and present, yet naively optimistic about the future, and dancing through every moment. You know how everyone has a drunken bar conversation they can talk endlessly about? Mine is about how W.C. Lindsay should have been a mainstream success, and that their album, Easy Victim, Charitable Deceptions, is a perfect coming-of-age album. And you could check that out on Spotify. W.C. Lindsay was local to Philadelphia, and I was lucky enough to meet Will and his bandmates George and Richie when they came on my college show, The WeWo Show. They played some hits, shot the shit, and we had a great time. From there, we became friendly, running into each other every now and then. I always had really engaging conversations with Will, and being such a huge fan of his music, I originally wanted to have him on the Love Songs episode, or was going to pair his interview with Greta's story about hiking the Pacific Crest Trail. But when I interviewed Will, I learned there was so much more to his relationship with his partner Rachel than I had ever realized. Most love stories seem straightforward because they're just that, stories. Will and Rachel's journey is not. Their relationship was challenging and took a lot of self-reflection and years of difficult, different experiences to get them to a great place where they wanted to be. They never compromised who they were, and because of that, they had the confidence to always be vulnerable with each other. What I love about their love story is that for as rewarding and loving as their relationship is, they give no illusion that it was a hard journey, but they know each other more than most couples do. Will's perspective on love isn't just influenced by Rachel, but his parents' divorce, growing up with negative masculine ideas, and the power of being vulnerable and open. And it got him to a point where he's embraced commitment through all walks of life. And after we spoke, I really wanted to hear Rachel's side of the story and how she felt going through all this. So today, we'll hear the story of Will and Rachel's relationship, from high school, to a college separation, to reuniting over distance, and finally, moving cross country together. And we'll hear it from both of their perspectives. First, here's Will. So before we start, I wanted to talk about our long-standing appointment to go skydiving.
Yeah.
So you posted on Twitter 6 years ago that you wanted to go skydiving, and I instantly responded because I thought there would be nothing cooler than to go skydiving with you.
Yeah. The funny thing about that story is I remember exactly where I was at the time. I was with some friends of mine in West Philly. We were at Drexel Park, and everyone in the group I was with was talking about Six Flags. I don't like theme parks. Growing up skateboarding and stuff, I do have a little bit of like, I don't know, a pathological need to like kick up the adrenaline like one click further. Like, and I'm not like happy sure. about this or proud about this. It's like pretty inconvenient in my life, but like a roller coaster just wouldn't do it for me. So in that conversation, I was listening to them, to my friends talking about the thrill that they got out of some of these roller coasters. And I was like, you know what? I don't care about this. I just immediately hopped on my phone and hit the social medias and was like, yo, I want to skydive. Who's going skydiving? And then the minute you responded, like, not only had we hung out like very little and like had a pretty positive first interaction, like I would have totally been down to like just hang as like a friend, but skydiving planned on Twitter with somebody I met recently, that is like, that's my speed right there. Yeah. So we still got to do it though. I'm down.
Yeah. It's good that you said planning because this was like 6 years ago. Never happened.
Some things take a long time to plan. I still think we're in the process.
You're right. I like that you gave your background. You were like at a party with friends talking about doing thrilling things. And I distinctly remember I was in my parents' house in my childhood bedroom just scrolling on Twitter and being like, oh, Will Lindsay wants to go skydiving. That sounds awesome. Can you go skydiving? We're still in quarantine. Can you like social distance skydive? That seems unsafe.
If you can set up a scenario where we can both somehow social distance and skydive, I am open to it. So I'm down.
I'll do some Google research. What do you think the most fearless thing you've ever done is?
I don't know. Instinctually, a lot of the stories that come up are stories that I'm like trying to kind of take a second look at in my mid to late 20s. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, you know, this is like a bigger conversation sort of about something else. But like a lot of my instances of tomfoolery, whatever you call it, have been largely influenced by the consumption of alcohol. That's definitely been something that I've been kind of wrestling with throughout my 20s. And I think coming out the other side of right now, I don't know, a part of my personality that I don't love is that I'm a contrarian and I like to like break the rules and push boundaries in certain ways, never in any like harmful ways. I would never want to hurt anyone. But yeah, I don't know.
Well, the reason I asked that question is because I think the story we're going to tell today is something that, sure, it's not an adrenaline junkie story, but it takes a lot of courage and a lot of self-reflection to kind of go what you and Rachel have gone through and getting back together and moving cross country together. That's really scary. That's really intimidating to a lot of people.
Yeah, it's funny, to be honest with you, that in my sort of, in the way I think about the things I've done, nothing in relation to my relationship with my partner, Rachel, has ever felt like I was being brave or courageous by doing anything to make sure it worked. Rachel is the most steadfast anchor I have in the world, and sticking with her and like making sure that I'm doing what I can to make our relationship work and continue and stay strong is something that, to me, it doesn't really register as courage. And we've been together a long time. I think that for people who haven't been in a really serious relationship for a long time, moving across the country with somebody might seem like a more courageous act or something than it felt like for me. And I think it's a case by case basis. It did not feel like a gamble, really. It just felt like the next place we were going to live together. So that, I think that made it feel less scary.
Yeah, instinctually, she just makes you strong. You don't feel as though you have to overcome a challenge because it doesn't seem like a challenge when you're with her.
Yeah, and definitely we've been through a lot together over the years too. And moving across the country in many ways was just another kind of crazy thing that we've done. It wasn't the first one. It won't be the last one. And it definitely wasn't the most difficult. Like that is for sure.
Well, let's start from the top because you've known Rachel, as you said, a really long time. You met in high school, correct?
We did. Yeah. We were both in high school. We were involved in like sort of similar volunteer activities, like a lot of upper middle class white high school kids. We went on some mission trips, did some service work together. We just spent a lot of time sort of peripherally involved in similar groups. In fact, the first couple times we interacted with each other, I really thought she was very mean, and I was extremely intimidated by her.
You were doing volunteer acts, and you thought she was like a mean person?
Rachel's one of those people that you want approval from. She's one of those people you meet, and you're like, okay, this person is cool. I mean, I'll just speak from my personal opinion. This person is cool. This person is a total babe. And like, I am intimidated and I feel nervous. At the time, I think now that we've talked about it in depth over the years, I think I registered a lot of things as standoffishness that were in fact just maybe like an initial shyness. She is definitely more of an introvert than I am. And there were things that I think I definitely misread. But from day one, I was just like, I'm not sure if this person likes me. And I feel like I need to win the approval of this person immediately.
How did you end up winning her approval?
I think it was honestly just like time spent working towards a shared goal, sort of. We did these mission trips, and like one particular one, we were juniors in high school. It was just sort of a service trip to Tijuana to kind of help at this orphanage there. It was life-changing for us in a lot of ways. I think it's a typical trip for, you know, young suburban kids to do. Opened our minds in a lot of ways, opened our eyes, but at the same time, being realistic about the change we're causing. And like, we've taken that energy into hopefully more productive places later in life. You know, at the time though, it felt huge. And we just spent that time together in this small, close-knit group. And yeah, so we, in 2008, we started hanging out at that. And then after that trip, we were like, kind of, you know, should we hang out after this? What should we do? And we ended up going to a rally for Barack Obama in 2008.
I have so many questions about this specific instance. Did you have to stand during the rally?
Yes.
Here's the thing. That's an automatic no-go for me. If I have tired feet, I can't be romantic.
Okay. I think that's like, that is such an actualized thought. I don't know that I have anything so specific that I know about myself. I don't know. That's very interesting.
Oh, wow. There was this girl I really liked when I worked at a radio station a couple years back. And I had a big crush on her, and we were working at this big concert in Philly together. And it was really fun, but it was like outdoors in the sun all day, and you're sweating and you're gross. And we were going to get food afterwards. And I was like, I am my worst self right now. Like, I am smelly and I am cranky, and I'm going to leave a horrible first impression. So we didn't go out, and I'm happy to say we never got together or talked after that.
How did you leave it at the end of that situation too? Was it like, hey, like obviously my feet are wrecked because we've been working a music festival all day or a show?
Oh, I didn't bring it up at all. I think she just dropped me off at the subway station.
Cool.
It's a good thing you didn't go to like a John Edwards rally, because then your story would be significantly less romantic.
It would. Yeah, it would. That would be, it is nice that we are sort of loosely tethered to such a historical figure, you know? And I don't remember actually the exact detail of this. I remember, I think maybe part of the specifics of it were that we had been texting already during when he officially got the nomination. And that's kind of how we landed on like, let's go to a rally together. Yeah. So it was good. It was definitely like not on our feet all day long. You know, I wouldn't equate it to the energy output of working a concert all day. You know, don't beat yourself up.
Yeah. Let's really focus this podcast on my feet than your romantic relationship. And you dated for a while in high school.
We did. Yeah. That was like junior year. We dated through the end of high school. And then for the first 2 years of college. So we're both from Columbus, Ohio, Columbus area. We went to different high schools, but we basically from the same place. And Rachel went to Ohio State, so right by home, and I came to Philadelphia, Drexel. And yeah, so we dated for the first 2 years of college, long distance, which was pretty brutal, to be honest, mostly because of me. I think I needed a lot more than Rachel did out of the quote unquote college experience. I don't know. I feel like I showed up on day one knowing that I was going to have the victories and pitfalls of the cliche college narrative.
You had a lot of victories.
I had a lot of moments I'm very proud of, particularly surrounding music, art, and friends and stuff. I immediately met a million kids who were more serious about music than anyone I had ever met at home. I immediately felt like, oh, like, wow, these are really my people. And to be honest, like, I leaned into it almost too hard at first. Like, I really, like, freshman year, I mean, I mentioned earlier some sort of longtime wrestling match with alcohol. Everybody wanted to party like me. Everybody liked the bands I liked. And I just really leaned into the whole community, and tons of amazing experiences, a lot of regrets from that time too. You know, there's plenty of people that I wish I would have been friendlier to, or wish I would have been more sober while interacting with, or, you know, whatever it is. And And that was definitely a hard thing for both of us. Definitely, I put Rachel through a lot those first 2 years of college. And after that, sort of in between sophomore and junior year, we decided, I think, that it was time for a break. And, you know, at the time, it wasn't like, let's go on a break. Let's see other people. It was really, I don't know, it's tough. It got to a mutual place by the end where we were like, you know, we both need space. For me, there was never a moment where I was like, I don't want to be with this person. It was just like, you know, one, there's a lot of life we haven't lived. And two, we're so far away and we're so focused. What people really know about long distance relationships is that being apart is really hard. A thing that people don't think about is the strain it also puts on your time together. You know what I mean? And I think that is one of the really hard things about distance that people don't necessarily talk about as much is like, yeah, it's brutal when you're far away from someone you love, but it's also tough when you've been far away from someone you love for 3 months and then you only have 5 days with them.
It really pressurizes it.
It pressurizes a lot. And then for us, there was the added component of the fact that like the place that I would often visit her was also the place I'm from. So it would be like, it's not only going home to spend 5 days with my partner. It's, you know, in that time, I'm expected to see my family, which my parents are divorced. So I would, you know, I'm expected to spend times and do multiple meals at both houses. I want to spend time with my little brother. I want to spend time with my friends from home if I can. And these are all things that like, not things I would want to prioritize above or below spending time with my partner. It's a weird little micro attention economy that just kind of cheapens the experience in some ways.
Yeah. And those 5 days that you're back from school, you're on constantly. One of the nice things about being in a relationship and what you have with Rachel now that you live with her is, like you said, if you want to watch a dumb show, you're just watching a dumb show. It doesn't seem like you have to be romantic. It doesn't seem like you have to cook or be incredibly engaging. And when you're on for that amount of time, you just wipe yourself out. And sometimes I've dated people who you don't see them constantly. And so when you do see them, it really puts a strain on making that time together worth it. And during some of that time, like I always felt I just needed a break. Like I needed like 20 minutes just to be with myself, decompress. And it's so hard to articulate like, hey, can you just like back off for like a half hour?
Definitely. And like, I think we're pretty good at reading each other too. So we rarely would have to verbalize something like that. And so real quick, that what I just said, I don't want to at all imply that we're on some like intuitive level and communication is always awesome. I do think one thing we are good at is like knowing when each other needs a little space. There are a lot of other areas where we're communicating and constantly working on that. And, you know, and also leaving someone alone, give them space to do what they need to do for 30 minutes of their life feels like way less than 30 minutes of the one weekend you have together. So, you know, after 4 years, we decided to take that time and sort of spend it apart. So Rachel is much more controlled than I am in every way. I think she did an incredible job at being broken up.
Okay. What does that mean?
When we were apart, like, I know for a fact that she like set up her phone. So like, she couldn't look at my Instagram, see what I was up to or anything. She's a very disciplined person in so many ways that are like just amazing to me every day. Like, first and foremost, she's in grad school and she in her like mid-20s decided to start doing homework again, which is beyond me. I can't even imagine why someone will put themselves through that. But that level of discipline, I think, leaks into so many areas of her life. I never did that for a second. I just remember very vividly. I remember on her 21st birthday, which was like not super long after we had broken up. She didn't drink at all before she was 21. And that was something that like I was always kind of bummed about because like I saw like my friends, couples, like, you know, when you're in high school, like your friends are like dating, they're 19 and they're like drinking together. It looks so classic and like Americana. And I just like really wanted us to have that. One of my favorite albums is Drake's album, Take Care. And I remember on her 21st birthday, just like I have Take Care on vinyl. I remember sitting alone in my room in West Philly, listening to Marvin's Room on repeat on vinyl with my computer with Spotify right in front of me. I did not need to be repeating one single on vinyl. This is so corny. I kept rolling back Marvin's Room. I was just like slamming red wine and just being like, man, I wish I was there for her 21st birth. Like, this is the type of behavior I engaged in when we were apart. I think that she was much more restrained and just like keeping an eye on what was going on.
Yeah, she knew not to give into those emotions. I have trouble with that. Like, that is incredibly endearing to me that she was so headstrong that she knew she had to do something hard and not give into her vulnerabilities to kind of let herself be and take that time for herself. Now, when you were having that initial conversation about the separation, did you, in the back of your mind, did you think you'd get back together eventually, or maybe we'll see where we are in a couple of years if we're in the same headspace, or was it just incredibly unknown?
At the time, it felt incredibly unknown, because really the goal for me was that I wanted to just live in Philly. You know, I wanted to just be fully present, you know, and that wasn't about like dating someone in Philly. That wasn't about any of that specifically. It was just that I didn't want to be anchored in such a way to someone who was home. And I can say, honestly, at that age, I knew on a cerebral level that I wanted the same experience for her. You know what I mean? If I would have like hopped on Instagram and she would have like started dating somebody else right away, it probably my like whole world probably would have collapsed. But like, I could honestly say that I felt that we both needed that experience. I probably didn't want to wrestle with the realities of what that might look like. But, you know, I did genuinely want it for both of us. I will say that the emotions that I felt in the months immediately after that is some of the lowest points of my life. It felt like the end of an era to me. It felt like when we broke up, it felt to me like I was then feeling all maybe the negative emotions that are mixed in when some people graduate high school and leave their hometown. Like, I grew up always like super certain I was going to leave. I love Columbus, Ohio is a good place, but like I don't really like relate. When I got to Philly, I only felt, oh my God, this is the place I need to be. This is amazing.
Did you write Little Ghost during the period of separation?
I did, yeah. Little ghost, little ghost, you're my oldest friend. You say we're young with broken hearts, but I think we're just bent. It's not something we can't mend, but we're a little mixed up. It might have been 15 years before you'd finally had enough of this broken love in a fishbowl. I don't want to leave when you're so old. I don't want to leave when you're wrinkled. And I don't want to break little kids home just like my parents did. My parents quit. We're the generation of parents split. We're the generation of little ghosts. And none of us seem to give a shit. Because I'm sorry over my dead body. You say, you say, you say, you say you don't play.
It's one of my favorite songs of all time, but you're very haunted by, obviously, as the title says, a little ghost, but did you feel haunted by your relationship with Rachel and that it had dissipated?
I did feel haunted by that. I think that a big thing is that my parents got divorced when I was young, and they had been married for, I think, 20 years, 21 years. And for all intents and purposes, they, you know, they handled everything as well as a pair of people could. Like, I really am very lucky in the steps they took to like insulate me from the damage. And, you know, when my dad moved out, he didn't move far. I like, you know, never had to change schools. I never had to do anything crazy. But I think that that did kind of plant in the back of my mind the idea that I was terrified of the fact that I was like, you know, 21 and feeling like I potentially had like a sort of like soulmate situation on my hands. I don't believe in like a soulmate or the one or any of that. I think that there can be many people who are that, but I definitely found one of them very lucky, but very young. And that was just really intimidating to me because like divorce had been such a prominent feature of my whole upbringing. And I just sort of felt like, you know, like if we don't really see what's out there and if we're not super aggressive at policing ourselves of not just being the cliche high school sweethearts, like we might get divorced in 20 years, which we still might. I mean, you know, that doesn't change, but like that just was where my thinking was there. And that intimidated me, but that also informed sort of why we broke up. There was always that thing where it wasn't like either of us had done anything wrong and we dumped each other. Like that was never the language that was used in any setting.
Yeah, neither of you hurt each other.
Yeah, it was a conscious decision. And that made it, I think, you know, more, I'm proud of us for doing it, but it made it harder because like there were a lot of nights where I was just like, why am I doing this?
Yeah, it makes it easier and harder because initially there isn't resentment. There's no hate towards this other person. However, because there's not that negative feeling, you also, when you're feeling low or you're feeling vulnerable, you want to go back to that person and you remember how good they made you feel and you want to be belong in their comfort again. And so those are the hardest times during those breakups that are less breakups and more parting ways. That's why they're so hard. And I think the reason I brought up little ghosts is because I personally don't believe in like actual ghosts and spirits. Like, I think that's all bullshit. But I genuinely believe that our ghosts are the personal matters in our life that haunt us that we have unresolved. And that's why they keep kind of popping up.
I definitely agree with that. And I mean, just popping up is the perfect way to phrase it. Rachel's a person that, like, even at our furthest apart, she just wouldn't stop popping up in my life. This is also one of those funny leanings in the relationship where, like, I have the well-worn situation where, like, my mom loves her so much. And, like, there was never a part of me, even for a second, that was like, oh, Rachel, my mom might, like, not be friends after this. She just keeps popping up. She always has.
What brought you back together?
Well, so in that time, we both did date other people, and it was a really important experience. You know, I am really grateful for that time. I got to meet some wonderful people, you know, no overall negative experiences. Like, there are lots of lovely human beings out there who are brilliant and attractive and cool or whatever, who are not her. What I realized deeper into that time, maybe like, you know, about a year or so into our separation, is I was engaging in the culture. I was dating or whatever, but in a very big way, I realized I was completely emotionally unavailable to anyone other than Rachel. I didn't have my shit figured out. I shouldn't have been dating. And what I needed then was like therapy and a lot of self-reflection. And I didn't do that until, you know, 27 or 28 or whatever.
Of course. Who started the conversation of getting back together? How did that blossom?
The conversation of getting back together. I mean, we got pretty drunk one night and made out a ton while broken up. And the ease with which that happened, the ease with which we stepped back into that space, that happened. And then we didn't, you know, label anything, but we started behaving like we were in a relationship again almost immediately. Pretty soon after that, we were hanging out a lot. And at this point, she was still in Ohio. She was finishing up school. So was I. We graduated 2014. After that, she moved to Boston to do a year in City Year, the AmeriCorps program City Year. And during that time, we sort of tried a different mode of the relationship where we were kind of long distance and we were spending whatever time we could with each other when we could. And I would go up to Boston whenever I could. It was easier for me to make that happen because I was playing music, gearing up for touring at that time and working in restaurants. I was pretty flexible. She was in AmeriCorps, she was working in City Year, which is an incredibly important organization doing incredibly important work that pays its employees almost nothing and works them within an inch of their life. And she did everything for that program and left it all on the table and crushed it. And me, I was just like helping hipsters get their pizza in Fishtown. So I was the one who was fine to drive up to Boston more often than not. But that was a time when, you know, we weren't like officially really back together. It was kind of open-ended. Loving Rachel and telling her that I love her has never been an issue for me. That has never been a question. It's been more of just that over the years, I've had to shed a lot of dumb baggage that I have from growing up when I did. Like, we grew up, you know, watching Entourage and thinking that that was like cool and that dude was the good guy. It's just there's shitty messaging that was just plowed into our brains from the time we were little. So a thing that I've really had to overcome in this relationship is just a lot of bullshit I have attached to the idea of like labels.
Yeah, this like weird masculine fear of being vulnerable.
Yeah. I feel like there is sort of this weird degree to which like dating around and, you know, like hooking up with a bunch of people is this like weird badge. And I just wish that I would have had the wherewithal to be a little more vulnerable in some conversations and be like, okay, what am I actually feeling right now? What am I actually thinking right now? What is it I'm actually scared of? And that is something that I think I've been able to do in recent years a lot better. And because of that, the quality of my life and of our relationship has improved immensely. You know, just being vulnerable as a dude, it's simple and it's like on the tip of everyone's tongue in 2020, but like, we got to fucking do it. We were raised with some pretty dumb ideas and like, it's time to like relearn.
Yeah. It's easier said than done. It's super hard to be vulnerable, especially with people who you find that important, that you don't want your feelings and your vulnerability to push them away.
Yeah. And it's well-worn territory understanding that the sort of things that are bouncing around in your head carry some enormous amount of weight. And then when you have a partner there or a friend or whatever that you can speak them to, they lose their power slowly over time. The more times you say something, the less powerful it is. So I began this conversation by telling you that I've been wrestling with a drinking problem a little bit, you know, and that's something that I'm trying to be vulnerable and honest about. Like, that's something that has been a huge change in my life this year, that I'm just done with it. And like, it's been scary because you build it up to be this thing that, you know, if you tell somebody, hey, like, I'm worried about my drinking and I'm wondering if I could talk to you about that. I'm very lucky to be surrounded by really cool, really understanding, really like thoughtful people. But there really is, I think, this idea that even the people you love most might hear you say something like that and be like, oh my God, what? Like, you're thinking what? You're feeling what? I don't, how on earth? What? Like, this is a shortcoming of you. This is a weakness of you. And in reality, that is not a conversation that I will ever have with anyone in my orbit at all. The people I love have been so supportive of me in everything I've done, good and bad, and they've been helpful through all times. And it's been an amazing ride so far with really, really good people. And the thing that I found most rewarding about being vulnerable and like talking to people and just being like, yo, listen, here's my dirty laundry. Here's my shit that I'm trying to own. It gets easier because then not only do they not respond how you can expect, they respond with an enormous degree of empathy, thoughtful responses. I mean, particularly with drinking, it's something that I think everybody wrestles with it to some degree at some point in some way. And it's something I've been able to have very meaningful conversations with a lot of people about. And the weight is gone in a lot of ways. Being vulnerable with somebody, it really opens you up to just getting that weight off your shoulder. And I recommend more people try it because it's addicting. As soon as you start being honest and being straightforward and trying to like do work and just quit being such a, you know, I really needed to quit being such a mildly repressed suburban white male. Everybody's got their struggles. You know, I've been extremely lucky. And yeah, just every time I decide to be like vulnerable with somebody I love, it highlights how lucky I am again. And so I don't know, I recommend people do it, go out on a limb.
Absolutely. I thank you so much for sharing that, especially on a public forum. Every single person has their flaws and what they're struggling with. And yet, especially in an age of social media and always posting your best, like people don't see the edges. People don't see the flaws. And so they feel as though they can't share that with people because there's a stigma, or they don't think as many people are grappling with it as there are. And so exactly to your point, and I thank you for saying it, we need to be open about how we're feeling. We need to be open about the holistic senses of ourselves. And we need to have a listening ear when others want to come forth and talk about that.
I totally agree.
Well, let's finish up your story with Rachel, because we're still missing a big part.
When she was in Boston, we had the conversation that was long overdue, which was like, all right, this is like, we are together. This is happening and we like it. So after Boston, she moved to Madrid for a year. She taught English in Spain. And that was one thing that I did want to tag into, like kind of a misconception about long distance relationships, at least as I experienced them. And I'd be interested to hear what other people have to say about this. But I found it way easier when she was living in Spain than when she was living in Boston, because when she was living in Boston, she was always just a drive away. There was never really any excuse when I had the time for me not to be there. And not that she made me feel this way at all. This was all just my own projection, but I kind of felt like, okay, every time I have the time to be there and I'm not there, I should be there. When she moved to Spain, it like took this massive weight off of small, less consequential weekends of hanging. And what it required us to do was like, I had to set aside a month basically to fly over there. And then she was teaching. So it was when she was on break and we would go travel. We went to Sweden. We went to Morocco. We went to Germany. It was amazing. We did all this stuff. And we planned it. And two, we had like a month together and we had enough time straight that we were kind of allowed to do what I was talking about earlier, where we got to start behaving like a real couple. You know, when you're around each other for a month straight, you start to lose the pressure of like, oh my God, like we need to spend every minute, you know, in each other's arms because we only have this weekend. While she was getting ready to leave Boston, we decided that we were going to like make it official, exclusive. We're doing this when she got to Spain. When she was ready to leave Spain, we were like, okay, we're for sure doing this now. That worked. Time to move in together. Come to Philly. And then, yeah, we lived in Philly together for 3 years. It has always been understood that she was going to need postgraduate education in her field. It's, you know, in her world, she has, you know, sort of a social work background and wants to be engaging in international education and working with nonprofits. And she felt that to get where she wanted to go, she needed to pursue postgraduate degrees. And that was always kind of on the table, but the specifics of it sort of materialized at a time.
And so you decide to go to Monterey.
Yeah. So she found this program at a school called the Middlebury Institute at Monterey. It's affiliated with Middlebury in Vermont. This insanely specific program, a weird combination of all her pre-existing strengths and things she wanted to develop. So she's getting a dual master's in international education management and a master's of public administration. She'll be there for 5 semesters total. She's knocking out 2 master's degrees in that time. And like some crazy percentage of her classes are taught in Spanish also. That's another component of the degree. And it's something that she is really honing and she's become incredible at, obviously, because it's an amazing thing to learn in your life, but also she wants to use it for work. And the program was just kind of perfect. And it was a situation where just kind of undeniably the correct choice for her, like school-wise, mm-hmm. career-wise.
Were there any hesitations on your end with this plan when you wanted to move?
This was really surprising to me when it happens. I moved to Philly in 2010 and we moved to Monterey in 2019. In those 9 years, I spent like basically the whole time thinking of myself as the type of person who would live a lot of places in my life. You know, I thought of myself as someone who was obviously going to live abroad someday, who was obviously going to live in the Pacific Northwest someday, who was obviously going to do all this stuff. And again, because of tour and because of like traveling and backpacking and stuff, I have been incredibly lucky and I've gotten to see so much of the world and I've had some great times. But at the end of the day, I lived in Philly for almost a decade. And the minute she was like, I found the program, it's in California, almost in an instant, it hit me. I was like, oh my God, if you would have not said this right now, I would have never left Philadelphia. I realized it all in one moment. I was like, you know, I have this idea of myself occupying this space in this narrative that is not accurate. What I actually am going to do if we don't do this is probably like buy a starter house in Port Richmond and do some of the work myself and some with friends and some I'd pay for, and which a lot of my friends are doing and having an amazing time doing it. There was no part of me that didn't want to do that, but there was a big part of me that wanted to do a lot of other things. And luckily, Rachel knows me better than anyone. And I don't know how much of this was deliberate, but she told me about this like a year in advance, which for me was like super helpful because like at the time I was like, oh my God, what are you thinking? This is so crazy. And then by the time we actually moved, I'm pretty sure I was like way more excited than she was because I had this amazing year where I was able to do like almost like a victory lap. And I got to sit down with a lot of my friends and just be like, hey, listen, like, this has been crazy. This has been a wild time. We've had so much fun. It's been such a pleasure, like living in the city with you. You know, you're my brother or my sister. We're going to be friends forever. I still love you, but we're moving. I wanted to check in with everybody and be like, hey, listen, like, I'm trying to grow a lot right now. I hope I was not shitty to you at this time. I hope that, you know, my drinking didn't negatively impact this tour at this moment. Just specific conversations. And what I heard was what I was saying earlier. Being vulnerable to all my friends was like the only thing I heard in response for a whole year was like, what are you talking about? A, I don't even remember that night. B, I love you and we will remain friends forever, regardless of where you live. By the end, I was convinced I was losing nothing and gaining a new place to live.
That's a nice little bow to have it. Now, you and I could talk endlessly on hours. So yeah. I have one last question for you to wrap this all up. Do you feel as though home is a place, a person, or a feeling? And if so, do you feel like you have found home?
I think it's a construct that everyone as an individual establishes for themselves. I wouldn't say also that it's tied specifically to Rachel exactly. I don't know. It's just there's a certain potential I feel at times. And it's most often with Rachel for sure. It's often with my band or with my friends. Sometimes if you like take a hard look at like what you're doing, how it's making you feel and how it's affecting your life, I feel like I have these moments where I'm just like, you know, this person is like part of my home. My answer for you is mostly Rachel, my closest friends who I play music with when I'm in a vehicle on the road headed to a show with them. These are my human beings on planet Earth. I feel right at home.
It's a feeling of you being completely yourself and feeling so comfortable in the environment, be it alone or with people, and just feeling secure.
A word that I've really been enjoying for the last 2 years, because I think it's so like triggering for people, is commitment. I think that mm-hmm. people are so freaked out by commitment. And I've kind of realized that like I was for a lot of years. I just realized how it's kind of bullshit, because like every good thing in my life has come from me committing hard to something. And mm-hmm. you're not, by committing to something, you're not, it's not this like life, these handcuffs. You're not, you know, you're not shackling yourself to a person or to an idea or to a job or to a place. That's not the way I feel. I've been lucky enough to never feel that way.
Yeah, it's not binding forever.
Yeah.
And I think that's something you think when you're young, it's like, oh, if I do this, I'm doing this forever. Like, this is going to change my life. It's like, no, if you don't like it, you can like switch directions.
And I do think that this is probably a product of, you know, getting a little older, hitting the age that I am. But I think that people think of commitment as a thing you choose. And for me, it's never been a choice. It's been a realization of something I've already done. Like, that's the thing with Rachel, is like, there was never a point where I was like, I'm going to commit to this person. There is only the point where I realize, no, I am committed to this person. This is who I'm going to be with, and this is where I'm going to be. When like in other people and friends, you know, when you commit, you do good work, you do better, you make better art.
Yeah. And it's less of a decision to commit, and something you've learned you've been doing all along is making tiny commitments, like you were saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I thank you so much for this. This was such an enlightening conversation. Thank you again for coming on. I love you, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah. I love you, Dan. Thank you so much.
Every time Will spoke about Rachel, he seemed so confident and proud to be a part of her life. There's a lot of challenges, though, and Rachel had to navigate them while moving to new cities and new countries. I sat down with Rachel to see how she felt about their separation and what restarting a relationship is like when you're in Boston and then Madrid. I mean, it's hard enough to live among Celtics fans. Imagine how hard it is doing so while evaluating your feelings for your partner. Not easy. Here's my conversation with Rachel.
I'm going to start by letting you set the record straight, because when I interviewed Will, he said his first impression of you is that you were intimidating and mean. What do you think of that assessment?
I've heard it before.
Oh, no.
We've had this conversation before. I am someone who has a very, very, for better or for worse, dry, sarcastic sense of humor. So what I meant to be a playful jab at his music at the time was interpreted very differently. And I did not mean for that. I didn't mean to be mean. I certainly have never considered myself to be intimidating. I am a quieter, more introverted person. So sometimes it might come across that way, but
what did you say about his music?
I mean, this would have been in 2006. He was in a band and he was the lead singer. And I remember making just like something along the lines of like, oh, that band that screams a lot. You're the guy that screams in that band or something like that. I shouldn't have said that. I regret it.
But hey, I think you've made amends since.
Yeah, yeah, we came through, thankfully.
He also said you're the type of person who others need approval from. Is that, do you find that to be true?
No, I mean, I wouldn't have said that about myself. I guess I would be curious to know more about the context around what made him say that.
Well, I'm going to try and seek your approval just because I crave it from everybody. But what was your first impression when you met Will?
So I met Will the summer of, before we went into high school. So this was, again, probably 2006. We were at the same summer camp, 14, 15 years old. And he was not someone I saw and was like, oh, that guy's my type, or I need to pursue that necessarily. He was clearly like a more extroverted, well-liked person. He was always with a group of friends. They were all like wearing lacrosse pennies, and there was always like a whole squad of girls following them around, at least from my perspective. So he seemed like a really charismatic, well-liked guy. And I just didn't, I guess, talk about being intimidated. That was probably a good word for how I felt.
So you were both intimidated by each other.
Yeah, it sounds like.
That's so romantic. That means you guys really felt for each other back then.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, that was the first time we ever met, too. We did not become romantically involved for a couple of years. There was never really an opportunity to get to know each other. I think we both sort of had our own things going on, and so we would overlap here and there. But it wasn't until we really started to get to know each other, I think, that we realized we had more in common and got along better than we might have initially.
I want to start kind of at separation, because after high school, Will went to college in Philadelphia. You stayed closer to home in Ohio, but you two stayed together. And he was talking a lot about when he would come back, it was very challenging to visit because he had to juggle you and family. And what was challenging on it from your perspective on your end when he would return?
What he described is definitely the case. I mean, when you're doing long distance, when you're apart, there's all this anticipation just building and you're, you know, counting down the days until the next time you're going to see each other. So when you're actually together, it's like, from my point of view, I couldn't help but just immediately start dreading the separation again. So it was almost like being present when you are able to be together in those short periods of time.
For sure. There's a weird thing about anticipation where it kind of feels like sometimes the anticipation is the best part because you're so excited. It has infinite potential. You see that person right away and it's really good. But then, like you said, you instantly go to, well, they're going to leave again and we're going to be separated again. Sometimes you don't always enjoy your present togetherness.
Yeah, and that was definitely something I struggled with, especially I think just being the age that we were and the position we were in. You know, we were 18, 19, 20 years old. We were in the middle of our undergraduate careers. So there was really no like light at the end of the tunnel. You know, we were sort of doing this indefinitely and neither of us had no end game. So that made it difficult too, because you're just kind of like, is this just how it's going to be and for how long? And it sucks. It's hard.
After you two broke up after the 2 years of college, Will said you were much more controlled about your separation. Did you feel like you were very in control about it and doing a good job of not seeing him on social media, not talking about him, not reaching out to him?
To me, it's not that black and white. I mean, when we first broke up, I was really, really sad. You know, Will had been one of my absolute best friends. So grieving that loss, I mean, was tough. I did know, and I made it clear once we made that decision to separate, that I knew that in order to really move forward and move on, I was going to have to kind of cut off communication and there was going to need to be some sort of clean break, because I just am not the kind of person who can just walk away from something like that. So I did. I stopped following him on social media. We definitely stopped talking. For me, that was absolutely necessary.
When you broke up, did you feel as though you'd get back together? Because Will kind of seemed to have a sense that you two would kind of circle back eventually if everything played out correctly.
I definitely wanted to believe that at the time, and I was hopeful, but I also was trying to be realistic and honest with myself. And I kept going back to the reason we made the decision to separate in the first place, which was that we really recognized the importance of giving ourselves some space to figure out who we were as individuals and pursue our respective professional goals, which were very, very different. And I think I was hopeful from time to time and sort of would play around with the idea. But overall, I didn't see how our paths were going to cross again and how, even if they did cross long term, they would go in a way that made sense for us to be together.
They still seemed very at odds with each other, even if it could work.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm curious to hear about kind of the getting back together from your perspective, because you seemed very hesitant to do that and see him and talk to him again. What was going on your end of everything?
I'm a cautious person by nature, and we had already sort of been on such a roller coaster being together for so long, and then making it the choice to, you know, separate, that was very intentional. And knowing that when and if we did get back together, that was going to be significant and maybe a longer term commitment we'd be making. So I was just wary of that. You know, I wanted to be sure that if we did that and we made that choice, that it was right and that it wasn't going to be just get back together briefly and then break up again because we make another major life decision that pulls us apart. So there's not like one moment I can point to where it was like, yes, we're going to do this. It was definitely a process, at least from my perspective. We got coffee, you know, we were back in town for the holidays. We were catching up, the conversation, as it always did whenever we would connect. It was so natural. And I just remember feeling excited that at that time it was like our senior year of college. And I was really proud of like what I had done in the past year and excited to share it with someone I knew me well and would be excited for me and supportive. We just kept talking, and that did sort of ultimately lead to us finding our way back into each other's lives.
Well, it's funny because there is that self-imposed fear when you get back together with someone that you have a close emotional connection with, or even when you first start dating someone that you really feel a connection with. And it's all self-imposed fear that, is this going to go wrong? How is it going to go wrong? I really like this person. I think they really like me. I know how crushed I can be if it doesn't go right. And so it's very brave to put yourself out there again and say, like, it's time to start and it's time for me to do right by myself.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, for me, it was not like a switch that clicked. In my mind, like us getting back together officially took place over the course of like the next probably 18 months because we were, you know, doing long distance in a different capacity. And
yeah, because it, like you said, it wasn't like a clean switch, a clean break. Like after you graduated college, you moved to Boston, Will stayed in Philadelphia, in a way relearning each other and getting back together, but still in separate cities, still with that distance in between you two.
Yeah, it was tricky. I mean, that was a really important and rewarding year, but it was also challenging in its own way because it was like, I mean, officially we were both single people. We just were clearly interested in each other. But again, we're just hesitant to, I don't know, we weren't into labels or whatever you want to say at the moment. We were reluctant to go straight back to where we had been. So, I mean, I was in a new city for the first time. I was trying to make my own friends and like figure out professional goals, like what I wanted to do next. And again, does this align with where Will's going in his life? Ultimately, obviously, yes, we decided to. It was tricky, just trying to continue figuring your own self out while also figuring out where this other person in this relationship fits. It's tricky, especially at that age where I was in my life.
When you were in Boston at the time, was there a part of you that said, let me keep Will at an arm's length because this is a new city for me and I'm in a new job. It's my first job out of college. And let me maybe grow into myself a little bit. Maybe I'll meet other people. Or was your connection with Will that strong that that was your main focus and priority?
Our connection was definitely strong. I mean, he was definitely, you know, I would meet people and, you know, they would ask if I was in a relationship or something. I would certainly, my answer was always more complex than, no, I'm single.
And like you said, that's a really tricky position to be in because you are guarded on both ends and it's not a clear definition.
Yeah, there was a lot of ambiguity for both of us and that was tricky, but I'm really proud of the way we were able to kind of talk through things as they came up that year. And I mean, the years that followed, ultimately that's made us a really communicative, open, dynamic duo, and it's contributed to how solid and secure I feel in our relationship now is the fact that we were able to talk through complicated, blurry lines and boundaries over the last few years.
That's fantastic. You moved from Boston to go to Madrid. And yeah. I'm curious, what was your conversation with Will like about that? Because you're saying, hey, I know this is kind of new and fresh and vulnerable again. Now I'm going to go even further to a foreign country.
It's so funny to think about in hindsight, because again, like almost the entirety of the year I was in Boston again, we were not like officially together. And I'd always wanted to live abroad and work abroad. And that had always been a goal that I had promised myself if the opportunity, you know, came along, I would take advantage of it. And the timing had worked out. I wanted this job in Spain for a bunch of different reasons. But when I shared it with Will, he was nothing but super supportive, you know, like, absolutely, this is something you want to do, you got to do it. That was like within that week. I remember I was in Philly for whatever reason and Will had introduced me as his girlfriend to someone, and that it was just like that simple. And I remember walking back to the car and being like, so that's where we are? Like, you wait till the week I decide I'm moving across the Atlantic Ocean. It was nice to know where we stood before I went so that we could make plans for once I came back.
You've kind of gotten this thing back that you craved for so long that gives you so much validation. Now you're going even further apart. How did you guys make that work and continue to build the relationship while you're on two different time zones in two different countries?
I think our previous experience as a long distance couple certainly helped kind of inform what to do and what not to do and how to communicate and how not to communicate. Going into it, knowing that we were back in a relationship and committed to each other. And then also, again, this was a one-year job contract I signed. So there was this finite amount of time that I knew I was going to be abroad. I knew that the option to come back after that was there and that potentially living in the same place with Will again was going to be there. So having that end date, which again, we didn't have when we were in school or when we were younger, made a huge difference. We tried to look at it as an opportunity too. Like when I was living in Spain, you know, I had an apartment in like central Madrid. It was awesome because his work schedule allowed him to travel for, you know, take off weeks at a time because he had that sort of flexibility. So it was like we got to travel places for lengths of time that most couples like just can't swing feasibly because of work or school or, you know, whatever other commitments they have, and strengthen our relationship in that way too.
Yeah, it must have been so flourishing to relearn each other as adults in a brand new place. Will was saying like it was easier when you were in Spain to visit you when you were in Spain than when you were in Boston, because you would take weeks off at a time and you guys would go on new adventures and really have that intimate time together.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. It was not perfect all the time. It's hard to be apart from someone that you love, but it was nice to be able, it was like when we were together, we had been planning for so long and like we're able to take chunks of time like that and go on really awesome adventures.
Yeah. When you were internationally separated, Did you guys have like a schedule, like, okay, I'm going to call you at this time every night or this time every day, and we're going to talk for this amount of time?
You know, we didn't. That sounds a little more like what we did when we were in school and did long distance the first time. We were regimented about talking regularly. And I cringe sometimes when I think about the way we were then and how much we were just trying to force communication. And in Spain, I felt so much more confident and secure in our relationship. And I think he did too, than I ever had before, that it was, I mean, we still made a point to talk to each other regularly. Time zones are obviously a little more complicated across an entire ocean, but it wasn't like, I talked to you this day at this time. It was just, what are you up to today? Are you going to have time? If not, great, we'll catch you tomorrow. And if we do, great. Skype, phone, text, there's a million different ways, thankfully.
Yeah, it seems like you were more secure in the relationship this time around, even though there was greater distance than the first time when you were trying to work it out in Ohio.
Yeah, that was definitely for me the most important piece.
And then you and Will moved together in Philly. Did there kind of feel like there was a huge sense of relief? Like, all right, we're in the same place, same time zone. We're back together again, finally.
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely like a surreal piece to that, right? Like the anticipation again, just kind of wondering, will this ever happen? And when it does, is it just going to be the best thing ever? And it was really exciting. I was definitely relieved in a lot of ways. But I mean, that said, I mean, we had those challenges that every couple faces when you move in and start cohabitating with someone new, but it was definitely a very positive overall experience. And it was just like, there was a sigh of relief.
That's so nice. And you spent 3 years in Philadelphia together. Mm-hmm. And what I loved when I was talking to Will is we brought up, you both now live in Monterey. And the way I presented the question to him was like talking about biggest risks or biggest like challenges. And when I brought that up as a potential one, he said, oh, I didn't even think of that at all, because it didn't seem like that at all. It seemed like a pretty straightforward decision to me.
Yeah. I mean, he's never been anything less than supportive of anything I've done or said I wanted to do, which is, you know, I'm really grateful for that.
I love the way you two talk about each other, because there is such a mutual respect. In Will's interview, he always referred to you as his partner, yeah, never his girlfriend, which I think is such a huge sign of admiration. And I talk to a lot of young couples, be it for the show or people in my own life, and you two are both one of the only two people who really understand the gravity of what it means to be in a relationship and the gravity of being entangled in each other's eyes, not just now, but for the foreseeable future, and understanding that your needs are going to change, his needs are going to be changed, and just being always open to that.
Yeah. And again, I mean, we've worked really hard to get to where we are now, but
For sure.
I mean, it's obviously really flattering and nice to hear you say that, especially having talked to both of us. But yeah, we laugh sometimes. We introduce each other as our partners. Sometimes we get questions about that. And it's just like, well, at this point in time, it feels like the idea of calling him my boyfriend seems just so silly, because he's so much more than that to me. You know, our lives are intertwined in so many ways. And he really is. He's my partner. It's nice to have someone like that in your corner and know that.
Relationships are tricky. And you should never doubt your feelings, but never force them either. You need to build up a trust with other people, and that takes time. We crave love and we want it instantly, but if we fall into it too soon, we may not be able to be sure it's right and come out even more hurt. Will and Rachel took the time to be separated, learn themselves, and they came back together even stronger through some incredible distance. It taught me to be open with how you feel, especially with those you love. It's true. The more you say something, the less power it has over you. Always share how you feel, and always be expressive. Because as Will once sang, you gotta live some time, might as well be tonight. A huge thank you to Will and Rachel for coming on the show today and taking their time to share their stories. If you want to hear more of Will's music, you can check out W.C. Lindsay and his current band, Cara Cara, both on Spotify and Bandcamp. Next week, Dr. Johnson returns, and him and I tackle the five love languages. Stay tuned. If you have a story you'd like to share, please email us at outofloveshow@gmail.com. Please subscribe to and review our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Out of Love is a production of Weibo Media and is recorded at Heck Street Studios. It is hosted and produced by Dan Castarella. The show is mixed by Ethan Farmer, our associate producer. Aaron Bradley is our art director. Today's opening theme is Oregon, and its closing theme is Grow, both written and performed by W.C. Lindsay. Special thanks to Sean Huber and Aish Menon. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Stay lovely.